it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast, coming to you live from Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew. That's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at EchternWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And you can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. And we're being produced today by old friend, old pal, formerly Mr. Hockey, and now Mr. Football.
Hey, guys. It's good to be back. It's good to be back.
Mr. Football doesn't sound
Steven,
right.
When will you be Mr. Baseball again, though?
I don't know.
Wow, never. Sean, yeah. That's what I heard.
I'll be on Sox post-game shows occasional Sundays.
Occasional Sundays?
Yes.
Ooh.
Occasionally Mr. Baseball. Don't hold your breath that you'll become Mr.
Seriously.
Baseball. Is there a Mr. Football? Obviously, Mr. Hockey is Gordie Howe. Is there a Mr.
Baseball? Mr. Baseball is Tom Selleck.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's a movie. Mr. Baseball is a movie starring Tom Selleck.
Great mustache.
Mr. Football, no, I don't think so.
There's Mr. Food.
Who's that?
Channel 7 food critic back in the day. Well, chef, really.
I could be a Mr. Food.
Mr. Food.
Is that how he talked, or did they have like a Bob Roorman?
No, that's how Joe Daly, the anchor, would introduce him every day. I'm old. I used to watch the news, and I still actually do watch the news.
Our guy Jim says, Mr. Baseball is Willie Mays. Is that an official... Jim is shaking his head. No, it's not an official.
He's just appointing him.
Who would be Mr. Baseball? Think on it. You don't have to answer it right now. You know, hey, who?
Bob Uecker.
Don Mattingly. Jim says.
Bob Uecker. Yeah,
but Bob Uecker wasn't good at baseball. Gordie Howe was.
That's the point.
One of the best of all time.
He wasn't good at baseball at all. He's been in baseball for like 80 years, and he played an actor in multiple things, Mr. Belvedere, and Major League.
You're leading with Mr. Belvedere.
I mean, great acting there.
I think he was on that.
Some great acting right there.
I don't hate Willie Mays. Hit that thumbs up button, though. Good to see Jim hanging out with us. We also got Midwest Rippin' and Brett hanging out. So if you haven't hit that like button, hit that like button. And I know Steven's got a goal of,
54,000 YouTube subscribers by NFL Draft Day, which is 1 week from today.
And how many away are we?
We are less than 200 away. So
we could do that by the end of the show. Let's go, guys.
Let's try.
You heard man. Let's do it.
Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. We'd appreciate it. We're going to talk today about how Chris Getz can try to turn this ship around. And not only just in the short term, not only just patch a couple, you know, leaks, right? How can we make this a fully functioning ship that will never sink, right? How do we make this the Titanic sunk? The Lusitania? Oh, no, that one sunk too.
The Hindenburg.
You're going to go with the Maine next?
That's not a boat.
That's not a boat. Still, that's an airship.
Still sunk.
Dork.
It's a rigid airship.
It sunk from the air.
So the
humanity.
We'll talk about the short-term and long-term fixes for the White Sox. And then we'll also preview the Phillies that they have coming up. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday matchup. Looking forward to Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola pitching against the White Sox. Should be fun. Short-term fix, maybe don't face really good teams with really good pitching because I don't think that bad hitters could hit good pitching from all my baseball research. That's what my baseball research tells me is bad hitters do poorly against good pitchers.
Well, they're not going to fix that in the very short term because the Phillies are throwing three good ones at them this weekend.
Yeah, I think the White Sox are making pitchers who probably are mediocre to good look great. I know Seth Lugo's been decent in the last couple of years, but they're making that man look like Cy Young. Same thing with Michael Walker. Like, just some bad at-bats. So, yes, there's some good pitchers out there that are making the White Sox look bad, but I think the rest of the league's going to adjust to Seth Lugo and Michael Walker and say, this is not that hard. Why are you having difficulties with this?
Well, and mostly, too, I think even though the sample size of this – point in the season is very small for a lot of things. It's large enough that we know that right now the White Sox problem is not that they're the onslaught of great arms, and that's nothing against those guys. These at-bats and these results are carrying over night after night after night, you know, and so I don't think it has really anything to do with who they're facing right now and more to do with what they're doing themselves, what they maybe are capable of doing themselves, but certainly the fixes are not in the schedule. They are in trying to figure out how they, these guys who some of them have had pretty good success at this level before, can either rediscover that or for some of them discovered for the first time.
I'm trying to think, like, besides Tyrique Skubal, is there a real top of the rotation starter that the White Sox have faced and have either done well or struggled against? I don't remember anybody.
Reynaldo Lopez.
Stop. I mean, he is doing well, but he's at the bottom of their.
Been doing very well.
He's at the bottom of their rotation. I mean, the Cleveland thing is nothing. The Kansas City thing, we've skipped Cole Reagans both times.
Didn't have to face Hunter Green.
Didn't have to face Spencer Strider before he got hurt. So, like, this is the test this weekend. Might get no-hit twice versus these guys.
They're going to Johnny Vandermeer, the White Sox?
Yeah. It's going to be tough, man. They're going to pummel all our pitchers, too, except for Garrett Crochet, of course.
And I guess that's the one thing that, you know, sticks out is we've seen the Sox get fairly decent pitching from, you know, their starters. I know, obviously, people hate Chris Flexen. Now he's been apparently flexed to a bullpen role, an 8.78 ERA in three starts. Soroka hasn't been fantastic, an ERA near 7, but he hasn't been bad in all four of those games. Fetty with a 3.10 ERA, Crochet with a 3.57 ERA, and then, obviously, we've seen two back-to-back starts from the rookies in Jonathan Cannon and Nick Nastrini, and both of them look well. So it doesn't seem like pitching is the issue. There's some bullpen names that I think will get some moans and groans from White Sox fans, like Tim Hill and Dominic Leone, but outside of that, Michael Kopech's been fairly effective. Davey Garcia has been effective when he's not walking guys. Steven Wilson's been affecting people. Jordan Leisure hasn't given up a run. So the pitching really doesn't seem to be in a fixing place, and it seems like what fixes they are making are Mike Clevinger, and he'll be here soon, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about what in the very short term of this one season needs to be addressed for the White Sox, is very clearly what wasn't addressed during the offseason, right? And that's the offense. Obviously, they brought in a couple of new hitting coaches. They were positive in one way or another on some of the guys they brought in. They liked what Dominic Fletcher did in the major leagues last year. They liked the track record, if you want to call it that, of Paul DeJong. Maybe it's should be more described as just past success because hasn't really been super consistent. But even the guys they brought in who were very clearly brought in for defensive reasons, they did have some compliments to give toward their offensive capabilities. But team-wide right now, and certainly injuries to arguably your top two hitters in Robert and Moncada that are going to knock them out for a long time, aren't helping. But team-wide right now, it's looking kind of ugly. Certainly, the Andrews stand out as guys who were supposed to be part of the reason that the offense would be okay, right? Or could be okay, I guess. When Chris Getz goes out and adds DeJong, Lopez, Maldonado, and Fletcher, guys that we're not expecting to do a ton offensively, the onus is on the guys who were here, those other five guys, Eloy, Moncada, Robert, Vaughn, and Benintendi, to figure things out for themselves and pick up not the slack necessarily, but carry the load here for the offense. That hasn't happened yet. For three of those guys, it's been health related. They haven't been able to play very many games. But the other two guys, the two Andrews, have struggled mightily. And you know, they're fortunate they've gotten something from Gavin Sheets. It's the reason they won a ball game yesterday. They're fortunate to maybe see Paul DeJong turning a little bit of a corner with a really good day yesterday, but it's Benintendi and Vaughn who not only need to pick up from the guys who are injured, need to pick up for themselves, but those are two guys who are probably going to be here past the end of this year. If you're talking about long-term stuff too, those two guys are where a focus should be. Moncada and Eloy might be in their final years as White Sox with those expensive team options coming up, but Benintendi and Vaughn don't figure to be going anywhere.
No, you bring up Gavin Sheets. Where would this offense, where it's at right now, I think way behind everybody else in the major leagues. I think they've got like 34 RBI or runs scored this year, and the second closest is like 58. And so where would the White Sox be without a person they weren't going to be counting on this year in Gavin Sheets?
We didn't even know if he was going to make the roster.
Exactly. And Robbie Grossman, too. Like, that guy's getting on base at a good clip. And if they didn't have those two guys, this offense would be even more woeful. That that's hard to believe, because if those guys did their regular, everyday, back of the baseball card numbers, it would be very, very bad for the White Sox, even worse than it is right now. So thank God for Gavin Sheets, what he did yesterday for the game-winning home run, and what he's doing this year, where he's kind of retooled his swing. And you guys can read more in Vinny's article if you are a CHEO diehard.
There you go. I need to write my apology letter to Gavin Sheets with all the times that people were like, trade Gavin Sheets in the chat. And I was like, oh, what, is he going to be driving Dylan Cease to Baltimore?
Well, I mean, to be fair, like in the offseason, and I think Gavin would probably agree with you on some level, like what had he done from a production standpoint to deserve anything but that, right? I mean, not necessarily being ridiculed, but I suppose the point being, you know, that like his production level up to that point was you were reacting to that, and he was the one who was telling me that, hey, he wasn't confident last year, he knew he wasn't playing like he thought he could. He had to go make a bunch of changes, do a bunch of work in order to get to a point where you're saying, you know, oh, my bad for in the offseason, because I don't think anybody saw this coming. And, you know, good for Gavin for going to work and believing in himself. But certainly, as I just said, Herb, we didn't even know that he was going to be able to beat out Mike Moustakas for a roster spot on opening day, and he's turned into their only reliable bat right now.
Yeah, and here we are. Look at him hitting the hell out of balls, and he's really the only one who's doing it. The White Sox are 30th in baseball in weighted runs created plus. They're at 67. The Miami Marlins are at 68. The Minnesota Twins and Detroit Tigers are at 80, 81. So, like, those are the there's like 20% difference between Miami and the White Sox being the worst, and then what? Who's 28th and 27th? So there is a pretty big crater there. And there was an interesting stat that they're not swinging and chasing as much, but they have no ability to hit the ball hard. So what the biggest issue I think
one of those
had,
things is good.
Yeah, right. The biggest issue with the White Sox has been those chase rates, those strikeouts, basically feeling like every inning is nine pitches, and you know the other opponent is just getting an easy light workout in. Right. The White Sox have been a little bit more disciplined and have been, you know, less chasey, but they just can't do any damage. A 196 batting average. Ugh. I've heard that's bad as a team. A 269 on base percentage.
Oh, Jesus
so
Christ.
Where would that be if that wasn't for Robbie Grossman? And a 302 slugging percentage, which is 20 points worse than the second worst team in the Miami Marlins. A 302 slugging compared to a 322 slugging. So it's just been horrendous. Is the short-term fix Tommy Pham? And maybe Gavin Sheets tells everyone not to worry as much?
I mean, Tommy Pham is part of that short-term fix. I think I still think that the main short-term fix is some of these guys who are here figuring things out, right? I mean, you want to see the guy who's on the screen right now, Eloy Jimenez, start hitting the ball in the air a little bit more. He's only been back up for a couple of days. And by the way, on base stuff looks all right.
Yeah.
A few walks yesterday, he looked like he was doing something right there, but he's got to get the ball in the air. He's got to hit the ball for power. That's why he's in the middle of the lineup, is to do something like that. And he said, you know, that was the focus of the offseason, was getting that done. Okay, let's see the results of that focus. He's got to show up. Vaughn's got to show up. Benintendi has to do something, man, because, I mean, and I'm not even, you know, talking about the Sean Anderson, Andrew Benintendi drinking game, but what I am talking about is he does not look very good at all right now, really in any facet.
No.
You know, the defense has gone from, you had numbers to back it up. It's gone from now very noticeable just watching it that he's not getting to a lot of balls, and obviously the offense is not there either. So he's got to figure out something to do, because he's not leaving this lineup. He's not going anywhere. He's going all over it. You know, Pedro Grifol, I think, looks at him as a guy who probably has the ability to hit anywhere. I don't think he sees him as, okay, well, you know, he started the season as the on-base guy. He doesn't have to stay there like we saw a few years ago. Tim Anderson was struggling, but he was an on-base, or he was a first, a leadoff man, right? He was in that top spot in the order, and that was his thing. He needed to be there. Andrew Benintendi probably has a little bit more lineup versatility than that, but you're seeing Pedro exhaust that lineup versatility in trying to find him a place where he can thrive.
Is there been talk about where he feels most comfortable? Because it seems like maybe that might be the fifth spot, but now with the injuries, he's been maybe forced into that second spot. If we see when Robert Moncada, Eloy are fully healthy, Does he return to the second spot when those guys are there? Does he stay at the fifth spot? Has there been talk about that?
Not really. And I do think, though, that that is a positive, right? I mean, I think if you were to ask him, he's the kind of guy who probably has that mindset of, I'm going to try to do my thing no matter where I am in the lineup. And I think that that is a positive, not necessarily a negative of, oh, you've got to search and find for where he goes. I think it's more of a, he probably has as good of a chance to break out 1 through 9, right? Because he's probably going up there trying to do the same thing. But it obviously just isn't working right now. You know, for a guy who spent last year seeing those kinds of results, but it was very explainable in terms of he was injured, right? He had the hand injury that carried over from last year. He got hit in the hand early in the season. Right now, there's nothing else. You know, he is fully healthy, and there's nothing else to say other than, wow, he's not feeling it, and he's not having the success that I think anybody in that organization thought he would have. But, man, he's got to figure it out, because so much of that lineup, you know, especially with Robert and Moncada out for weeks and months still, so much of that lineup depends on him.
I just think it has to do, like you were talking with Gavin Sheets, I'm sure that last year's struggles, even with the hand problem, are on this year with Andrew Benintendi, because while we've seen him not play well, we know he's not this guy. Like, he's not this bad. And same thing with Andrew Vaughn. Like, they have played well below where they're supposed to play at this point. So I just think it's a confidence thing where they don't believe they can do the things that they have shown in their careers that they can do. Because I know, Sean, that, you know, Andrew Benintendi's not one of anybody's favorite White Sox, but did you even in your own wildest dreams, your wildest nightmares, think that he would be this bad? Like, he's actively hurting the White Sox. I think he's a negative, like, 0.5 war player this year. Like, he's not this guy. So he needs to get out of his own head and do whatever he needs to do in Boston, where he was actual good player, or the 1 year in Kansas City where he made an all-star, and get back to that thinking. Because I think the whole White Sox struggling, him struggling last year, he signed the biggest contract in White Sox history, is all weighing on his shoulders, and this is the result of all that.
Steven, can you put the one cam on me? And then, Herb, can you re-ask that question? Just mainly, like, did I think that Andrew Benintendi would be this bad?
Sean, did you think that Andrew Benintendi would be this bad?
Yes. Let's take a break, and we'll let you know about our fantastic sponsors like RayCDJR and Leinenkugel. What? I tweet? I let you know before they even signed him. I'll take any other outfielder besides this guy.
I know that.
I'll take Joey Gallo on a one-year deal. I'll take Brandon Nimmo for 5 years.
There's no way you thought this
I'll
bad.
Take Michael A. Taylor. All right, we'll get to it. You were talking about going back to Boston. What do you need? A time machine. He needs to go talk to Doc Brown and get that DeLorean up to 88 miles per hour. Like, I mean, what are you talking about? He can't go back and just be magically 24. I know that one weird freak is trying to do it, Brian Johnson, who is the most funny guy to do that. The guy that's, like, turning, like, as pale as possible, trying to, like, recycle his blood. It's very weird.
Look
rich
like
guy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Anyways, look up Brian Johnson.
I really don't technical. Want to.
Not the former lineup.
That's what Andrew Benintendi needs to get back that Boston magic. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? If you are, then we have some great news for you. Our partner Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram in Fox Lake is celebrating the Jeep Celebration event all month long. And do you know what that means? You'll be able to rave about their savings on a wide selection of inventory. For a limited time, lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo Altitude for $439 a month for 39 months. And if that Grand Cherokee isn't big enough for you, check out the third row and lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited L for $479 a month for 39 months. At Ray CDJR, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest inventories and drive home with more money in your pocket than you'd expect thanks to Ray's price promise. So don't miss out. Shop great deals all month long and save big, because Ray CDJR makes buying a new vehicle more affordable than ever. And that's not all. Just for listening to CHGO, you can get a free oil change when you mention CHGO at the service center, or mention CHGO when you book online at RayCDJR/service, but you have to schedule before April 30th. So if you are in the market for a new vehicle, then you have to check out the team at Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram, because they are the only team we recommend. Visit them today on Route 12 in Fox Lake. For more information, visit Ray CDJR in Fox Lake or RayCDJR.com. Serving the community since 1963.
I don't know if you've been outside today, but not the greatest day. It's in the 50s. It cooled down a little bit. But there's one way you can always bring the sunshine, and that's by opening up a nice summer shandy. Line and Kugels makes a delectable beverage. And listen, it's not just bringing sunshine to your taste buds, guys, because it even brought sunshine to a certain White Sox fan yesterday. Steven, if you've got the graphic for you, I tweeted yesterday during game one about Paul DeJong's two-run home run. And here's our guy, Luke, who's always watching, saying it happened because he's drinking a shandy for the game today.
Let's go.
It brings sunshine wherever it goes. It's just part of the fantastic roster of Line and Kugel's beers, of course. You can have yourself a Berry Vice. You can have yourself a Honey Vice with real Wisconsin honey made by real Wisconsin bees, Herb. You can even go north of the border and get yourself a Liney's Original if you happen to be up in Wisconsin. But Summer Shandy, of course, is our favorite, and you can drink it, for all of your favorite summertime activities. Picnic by the lake, tailgate at the rate, canoeing up on Lake Whatever-a-gone up in Wisconsin. A Summer Shandy is the perfect thing to pair with that. So, guys, flavor life's simple moments with Line and Kugels. It's the official craft beer of your Chicago White Sox. Go to liney.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's liney.com/CHGO. Or pick up Line and Kugels pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Line and Kugels, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Line and Kugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes!
Last time Andrew Benintendi pulled an extra base hit was...
2023.
No. Well, yeah, 2023.
I was right.
Good job, Herb.
August of 2023.
Yeah, you're close. September 17th. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while. Off Sunny Gray. There you go. Was it over 100 miles per hour?
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was a gapper, though, and I missed those. I mean, anything. I'd take anything. I mean, he's got one hit that has actually reached right field this year. Yeah. You just can't even pull singles. Like, what do you do here?
I'm telling you,
you make $17.5 million. That's what he does.
It's just behind. Like, he's just thinking about everything else but the pitch that's coming right now. Because he's late on everything. He was late on a 3-1 fastball a couple days ago. I'm like, how are we late? What are we waiting for? What's the game plan there? That's the thing that gets me mad with these White Sox hitters. Like, count. Situation, they're not thinking of what's going on, what the pitcher is trying to get you into induce to, what his offerings are, and what you're gonna do. That guy is just lost at the plate. He doesn't know what to do. He has no idea, no clue.
Which is funny because it does seem like their team approach has been better, and I don't know if that has to deal with even Martin Maldonado's game planning. Maybe they're able to even game plan better from a hitting standpoint. Again, they're not chasing as many pitches as they used to, so that should be a good thing. Is it just that
they've also got a half of the lineup is brand new?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
and three guys are out too, which forces guys up. Is it just that these guys aren't athletic enough to be driving the ball? Like, is it just an issue of guys right now? Like, let's more focus on Lenin Sosa and Braden Shoemake. Are these guys that need to be on the roster right now? Are they guys that maybe should be going down and getting more work in AAA because they aren't, you know, these presence at the plate? Lenin Sosa and Braden Shoemake don't really seem like five hitters. Like, Lenin Sosa's been slotted in. Is it worth going and testing out a veteran at those positions? I don't even know who that'd be. Elvis Andrus, bring him back.
Well, Danny Mendick is down in the minor leagues. I think he's got like five or six home runs himself. I mean, he's a little long on the tooth as far as a person that you're thinking of for the future. So I would rather give these at bats to people who might be here. Danny Mendick, at the end of the day, is a fifth infielder at best. And so if you're just trying to improve the offense by that incrementally, yeah, Danny Mendick is a better hitter than both Braden Shoemake and Lenin Sosa. But I think that, yeah, you just have a team that they focus, like hyper-focused on the defense, where they kind of forgot about, oh, can these guys hit at all? And you said it yesterday, like Robbie Grossman gets on base, but he doesn't swing the bat that much. It's a valuable tool to get on base, but also after a while, they're going to be like, okay, you're not swinging. Here's a fastball down the middle. Cool. Go sit your ass down. So, yeah, I would say there's nobody down in the farm system right now that is a prototypical five hitter that is also ready to play. But I would replace the people that they're starting right now, where Paul DeJong gets like half the time. I'll be playing him all the time. You signed him to a major league deal. You've seen the Braden Chumik thing. It's not good. And for Leaning Sosa, I would send him back down in the minors and bring up Danny Mendick, who can actually put a little juice into the ball if you're looking for a little bit more offense.
I mean, that's where we're at.
It's bad. It's really bad.
You've seen this team.
I have. It's up close and personal.
Don't act like it's been good.
It's really piss poor.
No, but and I guess I'm just saying we. Let's put it this way. You said you'd rather see those at-bats go to younger guys.
Yes.
Because their big fix for the offense right now is signing Tommy Pham, right, and bringing him up. And potentially, down the road, that's likely to take away at-bats from Dominic Fletcher. It's likely to take away at-bats from Oscar Colas if they had any interest in calling him up, which eventually they might. But, you know, if you're talking about, oh, you got to play Danny Mendick every day, What are they doing, right? I mean, that's the other part of this question is not, you know, because we're talking about short-term fixes, right?
Yeah.
The other part of the question is long-term fixes.
Yep.
And while I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if you start Braden Shoemaker 95 times this year, he's going to turn into the third baseman of the future. I don't think that's a thing that's going to happen. But at the same time, what is benefiting this team right now for giving playing time to Danny Mendick, right?
Yeah,
maybe they get a couple more hits every week. You know what I mean? Like, is that worth sacrificing any percent chance of future success at the moment?
But I guess I'm not sold on Braden Shoemaker future success, and we even talked about at spring training, it seemed like Mendick would be making the 26-man roster, mainly because Shoemaker was dealing with an injury, and then it seemed like he kind of rebounded miraculously from that injury and was able to be on the opening day roster. I feel like that might have just been a mistake, and Shoemaker had a really nice first swing with the White Sox, and that went over the yard, but I don't think that it was that... I don't think it was the right move, because especially they talked about Shoemaker's speed. And we have not seen that at all.
Oh, he hasn't been on base.
Right. So, I mean, that's the issue. You know, I'd like to see at least a little bit more something from Shoemaker, because even what he provides in the field is a little lackluster. So it's like, yeah, I don't know.
He's not the guy to be having this argument over, obviously. He has not been very impressive.
I'd like cleaner baseball, I guess. Right. It seems like, yeah, Chris Getz has talked about, you know, we want guys that do the things right. And I think Mendick can do things more correctly than Shoemaker. And I understand the face that you're making, but it's like, you're not going to go sign Evan Longoria and he's going to be your third baseman. Like, you know, it's Brandon Belt, Donovan Solano, Evan Longoria,
bad,
Manny Pena, Tommy La Stella, Darren Ruff. Any of this? Tyler Naquin again? Anyone?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
Tyler right. Naquin again.
So, I think, I don't know. I wouldn't hate Mendick over Shoemaker, maybe even not Sosa, just because it gives you somebody who I think has a lower floor than Shoemaker. I think Shoemaker really doesn't know what to do when he struggles in the major leagues because he's never been there. Mendick has. Let's go to the other side of the diamond. Andrew Vaughn. Gavin Sheets can play first base. I don't know if I really want to see him in right field. We know that if he plays right field, that might make things a little bit more difficult for Tommy Pham getting playing time or Dominic Fletcher getting playing time. Andrew Vaughn has three options. Is it ridiculous to throw out the idea of Andrew Vaughn going down to AAA to try to work on things and maybe get a little bit more confidence, because there's been talk, too, about his leg kick and getting timing down? Maybe you go do that against AAA pitching and you try to get your swag back.
I mean, similar things have happened across Major League Baseball, right? I mean, if Andrew Vaughn were to go back down to the minors, or if the White Sox were to make the decision to send Andrew Vaughn to the minors, they would not be the first team to do that with a highly touted prospect, with a high draft pick, with a guy who is declared to be part of the long-term plan, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens maybe not every year to that degree, but it has happened with relative frequency across the game. That being said, what sort of, you know, you got to weigh the confidence part of it, right? And I mean, if this is a guy who's struggling right now, does his confidence get affected more by continuing to struggle, or does his confidence get affected more by even if it's the opposite case, right, that we're sending you down because we believe in you and we need you to be better so you can be part of the long-term plan here, is it read in a different way, and is that confidence end up hurt because of it? I'm not sure. And I think that Andrew Vaughn has long been described as somebody who is, you know, pretty even-keeled and has a pretty good understanding of things. So I'm not sure that would be a huge negative in the confidence department to make that move. But you don't want to overreact to a small sample, right? And we're not even a full month into the season yet. This is a season where you could be allowed to struggle because you're not, the expectations are not on, hey, we need you to be right because we're chasing the division or we're chasing a World Series kind of thing. It seems like maybe the circumstances are right to allow him to keep doing this for a little while longer until you discover, oh, this is hurting his development, him being up here and not being able to master this. There is development that still needs to occur, and it might need to occur down below. I mean, remember, while no one, Andrew probably included, was like thrilled with what he did last year, he was an above average major league hitter. He wasn't screaming last year, they need to find an alternative for this, or he doesn't know what he's doing. That was not the read, even if he wasn't living up to expectations, right? So I think right now you've got a few weeks of him being frighteningly poor from the results perspective, but if they see everything behind the scenes that they thought that they saw last year, and if they see a way out of this for him, you know, guys have really bad slumps sometimes. That's just kind of the nature of baseball. We'll see, though, if they determine that it's a development thing. I don't think that move, and again, I have no information or inkling of whether they would ever even consider doing that, but if that move were to happen, I don't think it would be this shocking, earth-shattering thing, because you do see it across the game.
And I think also, by if he continues on this path that he has been on, where he's hitting below 200, has no home runs, really driven nobody in a position of power, yeah, you think about sending him down there, not only for his sake, but for the rest of the organization's sake, because you can't have a first baseman struggling like that and staying on the team. To me, that as a player on that team, I would say, why does that guy get all this favorite status, where Oscar Colas, you know, did similar things last year, and he was sent down immediately. I know it's more complicated than just the numbers with Oscar Colas, but then as a player in that organization, you need some consistency. So if Andrew Vaughn is struggling and he can't do the things that he is getting paid to do, yeah, a demotion to AAA might be a thing that both benefits him and benefits the organization, because you have a person in Gavin Sheets that should be getting those at-bats when Tommy Pham comes up here and Aloy's still here. So I would say that if he is on this track and he continues there, I would see him definitely going down to the minor leagues. And I think he's a professional enough to realize that, yeah, I'm not doing the job, and he wouldn't take it personally. I hope he would just go down to Charlotte in that bandbox and mash and get whatever timing he needs to get down and then come back up to the major leagues ready to go.
Yeah, and he's obviously had a funny just minor league career. The first time he ever saw Charlotte was on a rehab stint in 2022, and he liked Charlotte. 7 at-bats, 2 hits, 2 homers. So, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, if we saw some pop, he doesn't have a single homer yet. That's just the biggest thing, is we don't really see him jumping on pitches. You don't really see him maybe feeling confident versus a pitcher. It's more of, I really have to lay off anything away, like especially against a right-hander, I have to lay off any slider that's away. And I thought it was funny that he was going up against Singer yesterday, who throws a sinker, and
that's confusing.
The first, yes it is, Len and DJ got confused with that yesterday. The first pitch that he saw was a slider that was a called strike in the zone, and then he sees the same pitch, but it's outside of the zone, and I think he's like, oh well, it's the same pitch, I gotta commit to it. And yep, then you know, this one's a worse pitch to swing at. It's like, yep, you should have picked the first one. It does seem like he's always getting behind against pitchers, and pitchers are able to really let the bat unfold how they want to against Andrew Vaughn, and he's really never able to, you know, flip it against a hitter. Connor did bring up Chris Young, the former outfielder that the Sox traded to Arizona. When he was 25, he got sent down in 2009 to AAA and then made it back up to the major leagues, and then later became a All-Star with Oakland, right? Yeah, no. All-Star with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So maybe he's a Chris Young, but you're comparing Chris Young and Andrew Vaughn, I think Chris Young's probably fairly more athletic.
Center fielder,
just a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit more hope that Chris Young could turn it around, but we'll see. Maybe Andrew Vaughn ends up getting sent down to AAA. Let's take another break, and then we'll go into some free agent stuff in the long term. Want to let you know, though, about our friends over at Prize Picks. They're the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and they're the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. With spring training over, baseball season is officially underway, so don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond in your prize pick entries. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs, take your pick of more than or less than and add them to your prize pick entry today. And you can also elevate your watching experience with the NBA playoffs and play-in rounds beginning. There are no games tonight, but tomorrow you'll have the conclusion of the Western Conference matchup, which I guess is not the Warriors because they got their butts kicked. It's the Kings and the other team.
Pelicans.
Mr. Basketball.
Yeah, look at Mr. Basketball. And then you also get the Heat and the Bulls tomorrow. So if you're looking to elevate your watching experience, download the Prize Picks app, and they have everything they have something for every sports fan, from baseball and basketball to League of Legends and everything in between. You could pick from LeBron, Shohei Ohtani, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. And it's as easy as making an entry in less than 60 seconds. You can just pick two of your favorite players, pick more than or less than, and then you could submit it right before the game starts. So go to prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Charlie the Bacon Guy is based out of Woodridge, Illinois, and he makes craft bacon and bacon jams in over 35 different flavors. Bacon and bacon jams are naturally cured, preservative-free products. No ingredients that Charlie cannot pronounce himself are involved in the process, unlike most store-bought brands, a thoroughbate or sodium acerbate, for example. This bacon is vacuum-sealed and freezes perfectly. Bacon lasts up to 60 days in the package in the refrigerator and 1 week after the seal is broken and 9 months in the freezer. Bacon jam lasts about 90 days in the fridge and up to 1 year in the freezer. But if you're keeping the bacon and the bacon jam in the freezer, you're doing it wrong. Check out all the awesome merch, as Steven's showing you right now, on Charlie's page, charliethebaconguy.com. They have beanies, hats, t-shirts, stickers, coffee mugs, etc. The bacon jam goes perfectly on anything. Put it on scrambled eggs, toast, crackers, burgers, grilled cheese, charcuterie board, cinnamon rolls, pizza, or Charlie's favorite, the spoon. And the Bacon Vault has all the flavors that Charlie's made in the past. If it's not currently available, give Charlie about 2 weeks and he'll make it for you. Some of the flavors he has going around right now: ranch, rosemary, vanilla bourbon, maple espresso, Cajun, jardinera, Canadian bacon, which is a new item, and the bacon jam flavors are original bourbon and cherry jalapeno. Starting now, you can save 10% on your order at charliethebaconguy.com when you use the code CHGOSOX. So CHGO socks at checkout. You can pick it up, which is the most efficient way for you, or he can deliver it to you, or meet you halfway, or even ship it. He makes the bacon so you can bring it home. Follow him on Instagram at CharlieTheBaconGuy or at Twitter, CZTheBaconGuy. The email is CharlieTheBaconGuy@gmail.com or the website is CharlieTheBaconGuy.com.
And he's crazy. He's injecting stuff.
Like, yes.
I mean, this man is taking photos of, like, needles into bacon. Like,
mad scientist.
Yeah, literally. I mean, and it's crazy what
I'll tell you what.
With.
Buffalo
I'll
bacon? I'll tell you what, Wimpy. Buffalo bacon? That sounds very good.
They got a lot of my money in Woodridge.
and Connor does mention he wishes that we had Chris Young patrolling center field for the late 2000s instead of two seasons of half-game Javi Vasquez. I will say, where was Chris Young July 29th, 2009, right? Where was he at?
He was not on the White Sox.
He was in
July
the minor 23rd. Leagues. If we're
July 23rd.
I think you're talking about... Well, he was not there.
Yeah, he was playing in Arizona against the Pittsburgh Pirates going 0-for-5. And do you think he had the swag, the confidence in a perfect game when Gabe Kapler hits one out into the gap to go up and climb the wall and make the catch? No. Only Dwayne Wise could do that. So I don't know about that, Connor. I might take Javi Vasquez instead of Chris Young because then maybe we don't get the perfect game. And hey, congrats to Mark Burley on this day 17 years ago. You got the no-hitter against the Texas Rangers. So, you know, it's always fun to reminisce because
wasn't
that's when
really,
the White Sox were
really
good.
Cold.
Really cold.
Yeah.
Really yeah, cold. Night game. I remember that game vividly. Sammy Sosa got picked off first after he walked.
And then I got to, and then someone reshared the entire inning today. So do you know how long that final inning was, that ninth inning was?
20 a seconds.
Minute. 3 minutes.
Okay.
3 minutes, and, really? Then, and then there was like a minute 20 of celebrating.
I guess 20 seconds is probably a little little hyperbolic.
But, I mean, it's crazy to watch because it's even quicker than
now.
The actual pitch clock. I mean, the second, and it's Nelson Cruz, he's not hitting a homer against the White Sox, so it's very surprising. But the second Nelson Cruz, like, starts to rest in his batting stance, there goes Mark Burley into his motion. And it's just, it's crazy to watch. There's no one like it. Put him in the Hall of Fame. Anyways, long term, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how much money and how much flexibility Chris Getz gets to spend. And there was an article that I saw today pop up on my timeline from 2019. This is from Sox Machine, so Jim Margolis wrote this, about Rick Hahn's free agent classes. In 2013, he had $16.3 million. He used that to sign Jeff Kepinger to a three-year, $12 million deal, and then Matt Lindstrom to a two-year, $4.3 million a year.
Ooh.
Matt Lindstrom.
Wow.
Believer.
Wow.
Lindstrom put up 0.7 war. Jeff Kepinger put up negative 1.9. So that's a grand total of 16.3 million for negative 1.2 war. That is very bad. That's a good,
They the DFA Jeff Kepinger.
Yes. In 2014, they spent $77 million, but thankfully 68 of that was on Jose Abreu. Then they spent $2 million on Felipe Paulino, $4 million on Scott Downs, and $3 million on Ronald Belisario. And that was a grand total of 19 war. If you take out Jose Abreu's 21.2 war, I think that would become a negative two number. So that's very fun. In 2015, they got to spend $96.5 million for a grand total of 9.3 war. They spent 12 on Adam LaRoche. They spent 42 on Melky Cabrera. He gave him 4.6 war. Giovanni Soto, $1.5 million. Emilio Bonifacio, $3 million. Gordon Beckham, $2 million. Zach Duke, $7 million. And then David Robertson, $29 million. So $96.5 million, they got 9.3 war. 2016, Deonor Navarro got $4 million. Alex Avila got $2.5 million. Austin Jackson got $5 million. Jimmy Rollins got $2 million. Matt Latos got $3 million. Grand total of $16.5 million for negative 0.2 war. 2017, they only spent $6 million on Derek Holland for negative 1.6 war. 2018, they spent $19.75 million on Wellington Castillo, Miguel Gonzalez, and Hector Santiago for negative 1.3 war. In 2019, they spent $19 million, and they got negative 0.6 war from Kelvin Herrera, John Jay, James McCann, and Irvin Santana. And we didn't get the fully updated Dallas Keuchel, Yasmani Grandal years as well. But, I mean, the biggest issue that I saw, and we continue to see with the White Sox, even with the Andrew Benintendi signing, is you're signing a guy for $75 million, and he's putting up negative war. You're not even getting a positive contribution from these free agent classes. If Chris Getz is able to actually sign the right free agents, maybe there is more of a plan. Maybe Brian Bannister's idea of how pitchers and certain pitch types work in a bullpen or, you know, in a rotation, maybe a grander vision could lead to more success, because it really did seem like every single free agent class that Rick Hahn had failed. And he was allowed to spend a decent amount of money each and every year.
Well, and I'll say this too. It you're saying there might be a better chance of it going right. It has to go right. Because the way that Rick Hahn acquired the majority of the talent that the last rebuild was centered around was through trades.
Yep.
And was through, you know, obviously they signed Luis Robert Jr. at one point. That was an international free agent signing. But the Chris Sale trade, the Jose Quintana trade, and the Adam Eaton trade provided a lot of the core of what was supposed to be a team that was going to be contending for years to come. They don't have that right now. They don't have those guys to trade, is my point. And so they already made the trade for Dylan Cease. There's two pitchers there, and maybe down the road, you know, if Slammin' Sammy Zavala turns into something, you know, we'll see. But he's a young guy. You know, I think your focus is obviously on Thorpe and Iriarte. Those guys have to be good, because that was one of, because the opportunities to cash in were so few for Chris Getz on the roster currently. I was talking with somebody the other day, and they brought up the idea to me, does this team have to trade Luis Robert Jr. at some point? And we talked about it during the offseason, and we said, oh, 4 years of control, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, he's a guy that you build around other than this. But is there anybody else that Chris Getz can trade for a impactful return? And maybe at the trade deadline, there will be, right? Maybe somebody will have a good 3-4 months of this season, and there will be somebody that he's able to turn into something else. But right now, there is not this group of 1, 2, 3 guys who other teams really, really want, like Rick Hahn was able to trade, to turn into a large number of potential players in the farm system. Right now, Chris Getz has brought in Thorpe. He's brought in Uriarte. They have Montgomery, they have Ramos, they have Caro, and they've got a lot of pitchers from last trade deadline, but where are those position players? If you're making one of those lineups of the future that we all were so fond of doing back in, you know, 2018, right? How many guys are even able to put on that lineup card right now, right? I mean, I just listed about four of them, including Robert, and it's assuming that Brian Ramos and Edgar Caro pan out, right? Yep. You know, Colson Montgomery's a top 10 prospect right now. That's a guy, absolutely. But you really need some of these other guys to hit. You need the player development group to start developing guys that we're not even talking about right now. It is not an easy path to the next good White Sox team, because the resources that Rick Hahn had to replenish the farm system, Chris Getz does not have.
Multiple things. Luis Robert thing, I would, if I was the White Sox, think differently. I know he signed with Scott Boras, but I would look at Luis and say, hey, man, look at Matt Chapman. Look at Jordan Montgomery. Look at Blake Snell. Look at all the people that you are aligned with, because you have the same agent. They didn't get the deals that they wanted, and I know that you want to go and get the most money you can get. You got 3.5 years left in your deal. You got hurt today, this year. This could go away. Here's an extension for you, Luis Robert. Bunch of money, and see if he bites, because he can see that people are not getting the money that they might have thought they were, and when it's coming to free agency. So if you're the White Sox, I would do everything I can to keep him. But if he's not amenable to a trade or to a extension of his contract right now, yeah, I would think about, at the trade deadline with 3.5 years left of Luis Robert, maybe if you can get the value, trading him that for more of a long-term solution. But also, you just listed out all those free agents that Rick Hahn signed. None of those were top 10 free agents. None of those free agents were, other teams were sought after those players. Like, there's 10 teams looking to get that player. Like, the best of those was, like, David Robertson, maybe Melky Cabrera. Yeah. But he was 3 years for, like, $15 million each year. It wasn't a good, like, break the bank.
We don't see a lot of those.
That's what I'm saying. You have people out there this year with Pete Alonso and Juan Soto, and these are pipe dreams, yes, but you got to change from who you are. You're the worst team in baseball, worst organization in baseball. Go out and try to sign Cody Bellinger. I know they came up just short of Zach Wheeler, but you have to pay a White Sox tax for these players to come here. Pay much more than what the other teams are offering. And that's how you change the fortunes, because then you sign those guys that are fine. You get negative WAR seasons. You get the Andrew Benintendis of the world because they're fine and they're affordable to you. How about you go and get an expensive person that you know is going to put up numbers no matter what? Yes, he's going to cost $25 million or $30 million, but in today's baseball, $30 million is nothing. Like, you're paying Manny Machado that right now. You're paying Bryce Harper that right now. You could have been paying those guys if you were willing to spend some money. Instead of doing this nickel-dime stuff, you're paying $18 million to Andrew Benintendi. Are you getting any type of semblance of that $18 million? No. So change your direction of how you go out and get free agents, and change how you look at free agents at the top of the list, not the middle or the bottom of the list, like they've been doing ever since I've been alive, except for Albert Bell. That's the only marquee free agent that I can think of that they went and got off the top of the free agent list.
And I'll say this too. There have been times, you know, this is obviously a recurring complaint, as you just brought up. It's been your whole life, Herb. This is a recurring complaint among White Sox fans that they don't spend as much in free agency. In at least recent years past, I've argued at times like, oh, the reason they don't have to do that is because they've look at all these guys they've got. They've got Luis Robert and Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez and Tim Anderson and Giolito and you know, all these guys. They got Cease. Now they don't have that anymore.
Nope.
And so if they don't go out and spend money on free agents next year, the alternative is not, oh, our homegrown core will power us to success. The alternative is this season again, right?
Yep.
Because I mean, this is the season in which now the core is gone or about to be gone in the case of likely Moncada and Deloy, and where is the minor leaguers to back it up? We just went through everything. You know, yeah, they got some good pitching prospects, but the offense is not promising, right? So they went out and bought and signed a bunch of guys to one-year deals this year. Maybe it's to get them to next offseason when the Moncada money comes off the books, when the Eloy money comes off the books. But if you don't then spend that money on free agents, where are you? You don't have that alternative of, oh, we'll do it ourselves with our guys and it'll be great. And because, you know, that could have happened. It didn't, but it could have happened. Now saying we'll do it with who we got right here is playing Lenin Sosa every day. And play, you know what I mean? And talking about, playing Corey Lee all the time. Not that he's doing poorly. He's doing fine. But mm-hmm. These are not the top of the list guys. Nope. that Moncada, Jimenez, Robert, Anderson all once were.
Yeah, 13 of their 30 are position players of the MLB top 30 prospects. So a lot of pitching heavy prospects in their current organization right now. And I think looking at the Russ Dorsey piece that came out today from Yahoo, him mentioning that they've been a top 10 team in team payroll just once in the past 10 years is obviously something that frustrates me. Meanwhile, when you're a team that's not receiving the benefits of small market teams, yep. Right? You're getting damaged in the 2025 draft because you aren't a small market team, because you do spend enough to be seen as a bigger market team. You're not a part of market sharing, right? And the one thing, too, like they've been a top 10 team in team payroll just once in the past 10 years, where the team that has won the World Series was in the top 10 eight of those years, which is cool, sick. Again, like they can't pick in the top 10 next year because they already have the fifth pick in the 2024 draft, even though they're going to be terrible and likely a lottery team. They don't have the ability to jumpstart it with a top five pick in 2025 as well. Along with Jerry's comments, what he brought up in August, we're not going to spend $300 million for a pitcher. It seems like their angle is let's develop all of our pitching, right? Let's go find the weird guys that we can, dust off and maybe turn into something like Chris Flexen or Mike Soroka. But then let's try to turn and use all six of the years that we have of team control and try to turn out just great pitchers, right? And I think that they're doing that with Nastrini. I think they're doing that with Cannon as well. And Getz also in that Dorsey piece said, there's different ways of going through these kinds of transition or phases. In the past, teams capitalize on getting high draft picks on a regular basis or trading certain players with a certain amount of service time left. You need to find those competitive advantages. I don't think there's a competitive advantage to trading a Luis Robert Jr. I think what the advantage, at least to the White Sox, is that you have, again, the money to spend. So spending that and maximizing that money, I think, should be to the Sox fullest advantage. And that's not spending on bullpen arms like we saw giving, just for the example I brought up, Kelvin Herrera, 2 years, $18 million, right? Like, go spend that on a bat that's going to play 150 games. If you're going to go spend $77 million, well, why not, go spend $77 million on a left fielder that will be a cornerstone? Obviously, Benintendi wasn't that, and that's a flaw of the past front office. But if you're going to have the money that they have, maybe having a more concerted direction and effort of being like, we're going to upgrade our lineup with the money that we're going to spend, and all of our in-house acquisitions or all of our in-house growing will be on the pitching side. Like, I don't really know if they're going to become a factory that's churning out bats, if that makes sense. Like, it seems like you're going to have a budget that's going to be 100 plus million. Go sign some bats, because especially with Moncada, Eloy coming off, you can spread that money around, that $30 plus million around, and try to get two or three guys, and there you go. Hey, you got what, one third of a lineup there.
What's that, $38 million available between those two?
Just 13 plus 25, yeah.
Just available. That sounds like a Juan Soto bet.
Let's go. Hey, you said it, not me. But, like, seriously, I mean,
I know he won't come here, but damn.
No, but I mean, the Harper thing is the one that just frustrates me the most, is because, like, literally, you look at how much he's getting paid now, and hey, who wouldn't want $20 million out of the three of us? Well, I'll take $20 million. But still, like, you're paying.
I'll just take $1
million. Yeah, right. You're paying Bryce Harper $20 million a year? Like, that just seems like stealing. That seems wrong. It seems like you're doing something unfair, and the White Sox were there and they just didn't feel like pushing the envelope. And I hope that they push the envelope when they're in those situations. And I think maybe if they know that they can push the envelope because their objective is to sign big bats, like maybe they'll get there. Maybe, just maybe.
And Shohei and his agency have given the blueprint for how you can sign a player and not be as painful to you in the immediate future. Like, Jerry won't own this team probably 20 years from now. I hope he lives that long. But you can have that deal where it's 10 years, but most of it's deferred. Get it back there. So whoever takes the team over after Jerry sells it, that's their problem type of thing, where you're just paying them a little bit money this year, a decent amount. But it's available so you can sign other players on top of that. That's what Shohei wanted the Dodgers to do. Get creative, White Sox. Do something to get these guys in here and actually producing, because we've been over the lineup. Like, that Andrew Benintendi thing's not working. I know they're not going to eat that. He's going to be playing for the next 2 years on the White Sox, guaranteed. Maybe that fifth year they'll eat it, but the next 2 years he's going to be playing. So you have to overdo that. You have to get a right fielder that's going to hit many more home runs and do some for Andrew Benintendi too, and then get a first baseman that's going to hit. If that's Andrew Vaughn, baby, I would love that. It's cheap, it's in-house, you don't have to spend a bunch of money. But if Pete Alonso's available, hey man,
I'd hate if they went and spent it on Pete Alonso, because you're just going and getting a first baseman. I get it's 50 home runs, but
yes.
I mean, you're going out and paying a first baseman premium money. I mean, I would like, you know, maybe a shortstop or a second baseman or a right fielder.
Pete Alonso is good.
Yes. Pete Alonso is good. I never said
he was just in. It'd be great to get a second shortstop, but those people are usually signed.
That's fair. Trey Turner hit the market, though. You never know. All right, let's wrap this up. I'll get to that question from referee in a second. I wanted to address Chicago, though, by saying I'm looking at your guys' merch so I can sit on camera like the Loop guy does in home games.
Wow,
so
he's
now? I guess. Nice. I think he also has a Lot B shirt. But, hey, Chicago, if you do that, I would suggest the Southside Script one, the black CHGO one. But if you do that, let us know that you're going to the game and you're going to be trying to sit behind a camera, and we'll try to
screenshot it.
It's right there on the YouTube you're watching right now. It shows you all the available options for merch. If you just hit that drop-down box.
There you go.
I've been there multiple times.
Upselling Herb. Yeah. All right, let's go to the start comment from referee 538, right? 583. Random question, I'm coming to Chicago for 4 days. What do I do, or what do I want to be doing as a huge White Sox fan before and after the game?
Yeah, I may have led him astray a little bit and told him to buy a Paul DeJong jersey. So you guys could probably give better suggestions than that.
I mean, he's got a 600 slugging percent right now.
Hit five hits in the doubleheader yesterday.
All right, maybe I didn't lead him astray. Buy the Paul DeJong jersey.
I mean, go to a tailgate, find one of the bars, you know, either Ballpark Pub that I went to, or Turtles, or Cork at the Park. All those places are good to spend before the game, and then go into the game hour and a half before the game when the gates open, because you're going to need to, because the lines are really long if you wait 30 minutes before the game, because it's dumb. And then just sample some of the delicious food, not the campfire milkshake. Just a regular hot dog, just grilled onions, hot dog, mustard, whatever you want to put on it. If you want to put ketchup on it, it's going to be frowned upon, but it's your mouth, so eat it.
I say you got to go a little further afield than that, mm-hmm. because there's good stuff in Bridgeport.
Okay.
Go down 35th Phil's. Street to Antique Taco. You go a little further down 35th Street to Phil's, which you know I love. It's one of my favorite pizza places in the city. How about Mars Brewing? Yep. Down 35th Street. How about you go up to 31st Street and go to Maria's?
Yep.
I mean, these are top-notch places. Pilsen is fantastic, not too far away. Chinatown is fantastic, not too far away. The South Side's got plenty of fantastic places to check out.
Connie's Pizza is right there in Chinatown.
I think, too, if you're downtown, I mean, you should check out the Art Museum. I think that's just.
Oh yeah, if you're doing tourist stuff, absolutely.
Does it have to be White Sox stuff? He said he's going to be in Chicago for 4 days.
Sure,
he's just going
to
be
go the whole
from 31st to 39th.
Go to the city.
Go to the Shedd Aquarium.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I don't know. You know, stretch out, see what the city has to do. I mean, I think just doing some Chicago stuff wouldn't lead you astray, because then you got to go watch the White Sox. So it's like you got to balance it with the bad and the good, you know.
And I don't know if your hometown has a lovely waterfront, but we have the lakefront. How about you just go top to bottom?
Yeah. Get a bike.
Hollywood, all the way down to Jackson Park. Boom.
Yeah, you can ride a divvy bike all the way down.
Whole way. I'm going to do that this summer. That's on my summer to-do list.
Are you stopping?
Doing the lakefront trail top to bottom.
Okay. You stopping at places?
On a bike or what?
On a bike.
Okay.
Yeah, on a divvy bike.
You're not going to Forrest Gump it and walk it?
Well, I mean, I've done that before.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I haven't done it that point to point, but I mean, like, the long walk I've done, I want to do the bike ride next. Right. Yeah.
Well, let us know. Just like when our guy Chicago sits behind the plate with a CHGO shirt. Let us know when you're biking.
You'll send a drone out to follow me around?
That'd be biking fun. The drive, but not the drive.
All right. Only other thing I have to throw out there is something I think Vinny will like. And shout out to Jordo, who in the chat, who says, shout out me, Sean, before it ends. Davey Andrews on Fangraphs put together, how many times have MLB players heard Center Field by John Fogerty? So the average major league player has heard Center Field by John Fogerty how many times?
Well, the average major league player.
Average major league player, including international.
I can guarantee you that it is played before every minor league baseball game in every minor league baseball stadium known to man.
Yes.
So I will say that's what? How long is a minor league baseball season? Like 120 games, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah. So 120 times the average major league player, let's say, is down in the minors 4 or 5 years. Okay. That's 6,000 or something, 600 or something like that games. Then major league, I'll say that the answer is over 1,000.
I'll say 1,500.
Okay, your math is just a little off. So for international players, including international players, it's 354.2 times. That's the average times that, including international players, they've heard John Fogerty center field. But at least for minor leagues, 4.45 years, there's 75 games. 40% of the games, that's 142.
Why is 75 games?
I don't. It says it in here. Because I don't think it's every home. Like it's. I don't think they're saying every.
Just the home games they're talking about.
I estimate 80 games per player each year. So I guess because it's not all AA, AAA are the same amount.
Okay.
If you're in Arizona, you might not be hearing it as much. So 80 was more of a guesstimate. And then the major league level was 4.83 years, 191 games, and that's 110 times. So the total, grand total in an American-born player's life, 418 times.
That's short.
I think that's low.
I've heard that song more than 1,000 times, and I don't even play.
As someone who worked at a minor league baseball stadium for about a similar number of years, I bet I've heard it over 1,000 times.
You're also seeking it out, though. I think.
Disagree. Don't like that song.
No, okay. That's a terrible.
As much
song.
As I love Creedence Clearwater Revival. Solo John Fogerty, no thank you.
Yeah, once that song comes on or Hotel California, I'm like, nope.
Oh, that song. That song I love.
Off. if you move to California, you'll hear it every damn day. It's annoying.
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
On a dark desert highway, you'll find Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at EckerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Steven, Mr. Hockey/Football/Mr. Baseball, for producing the show. Hit that thumbs up button and make sure you're subscribing to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Goodbye.
All silly like the mayor.